Welcome to episode 227 of the Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Money in the Bank Sunday, July 15th, 2012. I am the Solomonster, back with you this weekend. After missing last weekend, Vegas was fun. I got to see the site of WrestleMania 9, Caesar's Palace, which was a trip. Got a lot to talk about here on this week's show. A lot of different things to cover, including, of course, not the least of which, tonight's Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Which, if the last 2 years of Money in the Bank shows are any indication, this show should be a pretty good one, although the card, well, the card's a little thin. Not too many matches announced. I would suspect that we're probably going to have at least two or three matches added to the pay-per-view last minute, which seems to be the pattern over the last couple of months. I'm sure there'll be a Ryback squash shoved in there somewhere. Let's just give a quick overview of the card here in just a moment, but first thing I want to mention for those of you who are not aware, which is pretty much all of you, since I have not made the announcement yet, but tomorrow night, Monday, July 16th, it will be the final two-hour edition of Monday Night Raw before Raw goes 3 hours the following week. And tomorrow night, we are also going to be doing a brand new edition of SE Scoops Live on the main page. Myself and Noah Mark will be on the air 1 hour before Monday Night Raw, so that's 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central. I guess that would be 5 p.m. Pacific Time, which is the time zone I just came in from a couple of days ago. We're going to be doing the show. I don't know when we'll be doing another one after this. I'm sure we'll be doing more in the future, but it's going to be very difficult once Raw goes 3 hours. So if we do shows like this in the future, probably not going to be on a Monday night. So this may well be the final edition that comes your way on that day of the week. That's tomorrow night, July 16th. Again, 1 hour before Monday Night Raw. You can head over to SEScoops.com. There may be a chat set up, and there'll be a link to the streaming player through Blog Talk Radio. We'll take your calls as well, so you want to check into the website throughout the afternoon. I'm sure there'll be a phone number posted. You can call in, ask questions. We can talk about Raw. We can talk about whatever you guys want, the pay-per-view the night before. So please remember SE Scoops Live back on the air tomorrow night before Raw. Now, Money in the Bank tonight, as I mentioned, on pay-per-view. Quick rundown of the card here with some thoughts and predictions. Of course, we have the WWE Championship match between CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. AJ will be the special referee. This has been the dominant storyline of late in WWE, which gives me hope that this match will actually main event the show. I still maintain that there is a better than decent chance that John Cena's Money in the Bank match will end the show, but I'm hopeful that Punk and Bryan will finally have the chance to headline a pay-per-view, you know, being that it's for the WWE Championship and all. Kind of a minor point, I guess. Who's going to go over? That's the question. I'm sticking with CM Punk in this match. I think, you know, they can go a number of different directions. I don't know what direction they're going in. Talked about on the show before how, long-term at least, I would not be opposed to pairing AJ off with somebody completely different, somebody outside this little love triangle. We've had Kane involved, and of course Punk and Bryan. I think it would be way too obvious, quite frankly, for her to side with any of these guys. And for her to end up siding with Daniel Bryan and show that this whole thing all along has been just a setup and she was with Bryan the whole time, they've gone so far and so deep into the storyline and with the progression of the AJ character that I don't think you can do that. It really wouldn't make a lot of sense at this point to do that, especially since she's put Bryan through a table and she's really been pretty even-handed in terms of the way she's been treating both these guys. She hasn't really been showing favoritism towards one guy over the other. So whether it's pairing AJ off with a newcomer like a Dean Ambrose, which, you know, is an idea that I think I mentioned on the show before that somebody else had, which I would love, I think that'd be a hell of a way to introduce a new character like Ambrose, who could debut on television any week now. I don't really know what they're waiting for. Maybe they're waiting for Raw 1000. I don't know. But as far as the pay-per-view is concerned, I got to go with Punk. I feel like Punk's been champion now for about 8 months. I personally would like to see Punk go a full year with the championship before losing it. And who knows, maybe even go all the way to WrestleMania. I think to lose it to Bryan and then maybe have a rematch on Raw 1000 where Punk wins the championship, since that's going to be a big show, I could see them doing something like that. Do the title change here, do another quick title change. on the big first 3 hour Raw. You want to make an impression. And they have all these different cameos and appearances, but you can make no bigger impression than by having a world title change on that show. So I could see them going in that direction as well, but I'm going to stick to my gut. My gut tells me that whatever angle they have planned for the finish of this match, and obviously AJ will play into the finish somehow, I see Punk retaining the title. Sheamus will defend the World Heavyweight Championship against Alberto Del Rio. They did a nice little angle at the San Diego Comic-Con where Alberto and Ricardo crashed the WWE panel. Very similar to what they did last year when Punk crashed the panel and went back and forth with Triple H. This was not quite as exciting as that, obviously. But Alberto was great in his role. He busted out a rare comic book, which, of course, all the comic book geeks were going wacko over. Ripped it to shreds, and you know him and Sheamus cut promos on each other to build up their title match. So, you know, it seems like they did a better job maybe of building up that match through this one Comic-Con deal than they did on TV. But they're going to have a match for the World Heavyweight Championship, and you know, Sheamus to me is a guy that you want to keep the title on for a little while longer. You want to build him up for a big challenger. I don't know. I mean, I like Alberto. I love Ricardo, but. I just don't see the title changing hands here. Again, wouldn't shock me if it did. You know, it's not like I'm going to be stunned or anything like that, but my gut tells me that Sheamus retains. And I'm probably already wrong since I'm predicting both champions retain. And keep in mind, you know, there could very well be a Money in the Bank cash-in attempt on this show that I'm not taking into consideration. And there's really no way for me to predict that since I don't know who's winning Money in the Bank, but... at least in terms of these two title matches, I'm gonna go with the champions retaining. And that brings us to the Money in the Bank ladder matches. The first one, of course, is for the WWE Championship contract. John Cena, The Big Show, Chris Jericho, and Kane. So they're only having four guys in this match, all of whom are former world champions. The first time they're doing something like this. I've said before, why John Cena has to be in the Money in the Bank match, I have no idea. The guy's been champion 10 times. He can seemingly get a title shot anytime he wants to. Even though he has not been champion for about a year now, almost a year. Actually, maybe it has been about a year, and which is nice, and it's been refreshing, although he's still headlined pay-per-view after pay-per-view after pay-per-view, and you know, if you're going to do that, you may as well put the title on the guy, but I don't know. The idea that he has to be in this match to get a title shot, and it means so much to him, just like the match with Rock at WrestleMania meant so much to him. You know, I have to win this match or else I'm nothing. And of course, WrestleMania came and went. He lost. And he was the same old John Cena. Nothing really changed. So why anybody would believe him when he cuts these promos, I have no idea. I'm going to go with Chris Jericho in this match. And the reason is, you know, Jericho is going to be touring with his band again. So he's probably going to have some downtime. He may disappear again from television, which would, you know, probably indicate that he would not win this match. I take a different approach in that it almost makes the most sense for Jericho then to win Money in the Bank because he can win the briefcase, he could disappear. Now, I don't think he's going to disappear for an extended period of time. I'm pretty sure he'll be part of SummerSlam, for example, so, you know, realistically, how long could he really be gone for? But if he's going to take some time off, he'll be gone for a little bit, he'll come back, he'll be gone for a little bit. You never really know when Jericho might be back on TV. To me, it makes it more unpredictable, because he can show up one week completely unexpectedly and try to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase. And with Jericho, there's no harm in having him cash in and be the first person to lose. I would rather somebody like Chris Jericho be the first person to cash in his briefcase and lose than somebody, for example, like Tyson Kidd, if there was a snowball's chance in hell that Tyson Kidd was going to win Money in the Bank tonight, and I think he has a chance. I would rather it be somebody like Jericho than Tyson Kidd. I feel like if Tyson Kidd were to somehow win Money in the Bank and be the first person to cash in and lose, it would just solidify the fact that, you know, WWE does not see him at that level. You know, he's a jobber. Don't believe in him. Don't invest in him. Jericho is almost bulletproof at this point. If anything, I think he probably does too many jobs for some of the younger guys. And I could easily see him saying, you know what, yeah, I'll win Money in the Bank and cash in, lose. I got no problem with that. So the idea that he can disappear for a while and then unexpectedly reappear and cash in, and it can be kind of a shocking, surprising thing, I like that element to it. Having Kane win Money in the Bank, you know, unless there's still something going on with Kane and AJ that we're unaware of, and this is going to somehow tie into the championship match, I don't really see how that makes sense. Kane's already won Money in the Bank before, and cashed in successfully and won the world title. I don't see a reason for Kane to win Money in the Bank again, unless he is still part of that Punk Brian AJ thing. And it seemed to me a couple weeks ago they pretty much blew that off as far as Kane's involvement is concerned. Big Show winning Money in the Bank could very well happen. He seems to be the odds-on favorite with a lot of people. Maybe Big Show wins the briefcase and, you know, cashes in advance, setting up a title match with Punk at SummerSlam if they want to go in that direction. To me, Punk and Big Show doesn't really elicit a lot of emotion. I really could give two shits about that match, personally. And John Cena winning Money in the Bank, don't even get me started on that. Talk about a waste. So I'm going to go with Jericho. The World Championship contract will be up for grabs in a second Money in the Bank match, and this one intrigues me more, just in terms of the people involved. You have Cody Rhodes, Dolph Ziggler, Christian, Santino Marella, Tensai, Damian Sandow, Sin Cara, and Tyson Kidd in the Money in the Bank match. And this is more like it. You know, this is what a Money in the Bank match to me should be. It's a collection of young guys, maybe smaller guys, mid-card guys, guys that were world champion maybe but have fallen from grace in terms of somebody like Christian. And even Ziggler technically is a former world champion. Any one of these guys could, you know, conceivably win Money in the Bank. You know, they're hungry enough. They want a title shot. They're not in the title picture. Unlike guys like Jericho and Cena and Big Show who, you know, are seemingly in the main event spotlight all the time. These are guys that are going to be hungry to want to win that briefcase and get that title shot. It makes sense. Now, I said when Cody Rhodes qualified that if Dolph Ziggler wasn't in this match, Cody would be my pick. And then Ziggler went and qualified for it. I'm sticking with Dolph Ziggler as my pick. I will say this about Tyson Kidd. From what I understand, there is a push in WWE to push Tyson Kidd. I don't know push him how far. I don't see them pushing him as a main eventer or anything. And you know, Vince McMahon could wake up one morning and have one thought and then wake up the next morning and have a completely different thought. So who the hell knows? Not out of the realm of possibility that Tyson Kidd could be the upset. You know, the upset victor in this match. I don't know that too many people expected Daniel Bryan to win last year, and he did. So who's to say that Tyson Kidd doesn't win here? And again, maybe he's the first person to cash in and lose. I could easily see that. I'm sticking with Dolph just because, first of all, the guy deserves it. He's been losing nonstop to Sheamus. I mean, he must have eaten about 18 bro kicks over the last 5 or 6 weeks. He just loses and loses and loses, and somehow he's still over with a nice chunk of the audience. But this is WWE's MO. Have somebody lose, you beat them down, constantly just beat them down, make them lose, and then out of nowhere they get a big win, or they win a championship. I mean, look at Daniel Bryan last year. If I remember correctly, he was on a losing streak heading into Money in the Bank. He certainly wasn't winning very many matches, and all of a sudden he won the briefcase. And even then, they didn't really do much with him, but a couple months later, he cashed in and he was the world champion. That's their MO. Well, if there's one silver lining in the way that Ziggler has been booked, I would hope that it's the fact that he's going to win Money in the Bank. When he might cash in, I don't know. You know, maybe he'll hold on to the briefcase for a couple of months. Maybe he'll cash in tonight. I have absolutely no idea. But to me, of the people in this match, he deserves it the most. The way he's been booked would seem to indicate to me that he should be the favorite as far as I'm concerned. The only thing that kind of makes me think twice about this prediction is that I'm predicting both champions to retain, and I'm predicting two heels to win both Money in the Bank matches. Something tells me that's not going to happen, but Ziggler is my pick in that match. And the only other match announced for the pay-per-view is not even on the pay-per-view. It's on the YouTube, Facebook, pre-show, whatever the hell it is. Tag team title match, Kofi Kingston and R-Truth defending against Camacho and Unico. And as much as I love Unico, I've said that numerous times before, I think he's severely underutilized. I'm going to go with Kofi and R-Truth retaining here. I just don't see there being a title change in this match. So we'll see what other matches they add on the pay-per-view. I'm sure there'll be a Ryback squash, like I said. The track record for this show the last 2 years has been excellent. I mean, they've been both excellent pay-per-view shows from top to bottom. Last year's show was among the best pay-per-views WWE has ever done. That main event with Punk and Cena, to me, is John Cena's all-time best match, and it was the match of the year for 2011. You've got Punk and Bryan in there tonight. Granted, AJ is in there, and my concern is that the focus will be too much on her and not as much on the match itself. But whenever you put Daniel Bryan and CM Punk in the ring together one-on-one, especially on pay-per-view, if you give them a good 20 minutes, They can go in there and really create some magic. So they certainly have the potential to have a match of the year candidate if they're given the chance to tonight. So I'm looking forward to seeing what those two guys pull out of their sleeves. Switch over to TNA for a second. TNA had their Destination X pay-per-view last weekend. I had an opportunity a couple of days late once I got home to finally watch the show, and I very much enjoyed it. It was a very good show. From top to bottom, I don't know if it was as good as Slammiversary last month, but certainly the second half of the show was very strong. The main event was very good. The Kurt Angle-Samoa Joe match I enjoyed immensely. I really think they've got it right this year, unlike last year with this whole Bound for Glory series, because things are a little bit clearer to me. It's easier to understand the point values, and they put the leaderboard up, and who's in the lead, and, you know, a submission is 10 points, a pinfall is 7 points. So it's easier to follow. And unlike last year, where Samoa Joe, I think, was dead last at the bottom of the list, he's actually leading the pack in the Bound for Glory series, which is nice to see. And he got a clean victory over Kurt Angle at the pay-per-view. I mean, this was about as big a victory for Samoa Joe as he has had in TNA maybe in years. And he did lose, I believe, on Impact this past week, but that's fine. I mean, you can't win every single match. In terms of a pay-per-view match one-on-one with Kurt Angle, you know, choking out Kurt Angle, that's pretty impressive right there. So it's good to see something of a renewed push for Joe, who had been shoved to the side, in my opinion, for far too long. He became a tag team wrestler. He had a pretty good act going with Magnus, but Joe is better than that. You know, Joe shouldn't be relegated to just being a tag team wrestler. So it's nice to see him getting some more recognition on the show. Last man standing match between AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels. Very good stuff. Pretty good finish, too. The Styles clash onto a table off the stage. That was pretty impressive. About as good of a last man standing match as you'll see. You know, they've really built up the bad blood between these two guys with this whole Claire Lynch storyline, as awful as her acting is. They've given us a reason to really invest in these guys. Christopher Daniels has become one of the more entertaining characters on TNA television, him and his Apple Teenies, which I've never tried, by the way. I should try one of those one of these days. I was too busy sipping mojitos in Vegas. Maybe I should have tried an Apple Teenie. But, AJ Styles gets the win, big win for him at the pay-per-view. Both guys end up a bloody mess. And, of course, that all led to the main event. Actually, before the main event, I'm kind of leaving out an important point here, Ultimate X crowned a new X Division champion. It was Kenny King, who I'll talk about in a second, Zema Ion, Sanjay Dutt, and Mason Andrews for the now vacant X Division title. Austin Aries, of course, vacating the championship so he can have a shot at the TNA World Heavyweight title. This was okay. I mean, I never did see some of those early X Ultimate X matches that TNA had years and years ago, so I can't really compare this to the old ones. From what I understand, some of those old ones were just amazing. This was not amazing. This did not blow me away. Sanjay Dutt suffered an injury during this match, unfortunately, and came back out for the finish. But I think his arm popped out of the socket or separated shoulder. Something happened to him. This is also a pretty short match. You know, pretty straightforward stuff. Nothing terribly amazing. Zema Ion wins the championship. Seems like they're setting up something down the road with him and Jesse Sorensen, who made an appearance as well. And is still recovering from his broken neck. I have no idea when he's going to be back. I personally would not expect him to be back this year. So this looks like they're building to something long term. So Zema Ion may be your X Division champion for quite some time. If the idea is to keep the title on him until Jesse is ready to come back, I think you're looking at a several month long reign at least for Ion. So this was fine. And then the main event: Bobby Roode and Austin Aries for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. Not going to lie, didn't expect Austin Aries to walk out with the title, but he did. And this is something I'll give TNA a lot of credit for, because if this were WWE, I think, you know, you would have seen the opposite here. When there is a groundswell of support for somebody and the fans really start getting behind somebody, if they've got long-term plans, more often than not, I mean, they'll change their minds on their own. But if they have a plan, regardless of what the fans think, they're going to stick to it. And I think if this were WWE, they would have booked Bobby Roode to win. You can make the argument that that was the right thing to do, and TNA made a mistake, because clearly they were building to a Bobby Roode-James Storm match at Bound for Glory, and they still might be. I personally expect Bobby Roode to get the title back pretty soon. But whatever ends up happening, the plan had always been for James Storm, who lost in that cage match at Lockdown, I believe it was, to Bobby Roode to go away for a little while, come back, do the big comeback, win the Bound for Glory series and get the title shot, and finally win the big one against his former tag team partner. And again, that might still happen. But Bobby Roode's record-setting run as champion is now over. They put the title on Austin Aries because they saw that Austin Aries was over. People were getting behind him. They really wanted to see him badly win the championship and beat Bobby Roode. And TNA actually gave the fans what they wanted to. And this was a hell of a match, a hell of a finish to this match, in fact. Austin Aries wins with the Brainbuster, 1-2-3. They did a whole big confetti celebration. People were going nuts. He was celebrating with the title, and this was pretty cool because I had to be reminded of this because I had forgotten, but one of the last, if not the last Ring of Honor show, this gives you an indication of how long it's been since I've been to a Ring of Honor show here in New York, but the last Ring of Honor show that I was at, Austin Aries won the Ring of Honor championship. I think it might have been for a second time or something like that. So that was the last ROH show I ever went to. He won the ROH title. And so to see Austin Aries here on pay-per-view, you know, on a TNA show, winning the TNA World Heavyweight title was quite the accomplishment. I really, you know, you feel happy for the guy. And again, here's a guy who wasn't even good enough to appear on Tough Enough, according to WWE, because he was too small. He was your, you know, obligatory indie guy. And he got cut from what was going to be the original Tough Enough roster. He got cut. And I think, you know, it pissed him off, and there was some talk that he might be done with pro wrestling, and TNA gave him a shot. And he took the ball, and he ran with it. And he is one of the more popular guys in all of pro wrestling right now, and I think he's a great success story and a great lesson for people in WWE who don't think that certain people on the indies who are a certain size, because Austin Aries is a small guy. He's probably one of the smallest world champions there's ever been in any major kind of national wrestling promotion, but that's fine. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that. Hopefully, he'll have he'll be booked better than Rey Mysterio was when he won the world title in WWE. But this was a fine way to end this pay-per-view. And so, as far as I'm concerned, I've seen the last two TNA pay-per-views now. They're two for two. This is a company that has a lot of buzz. It's not being reflected in the ratings, unfortunately, and the DirecTV situation certainly won't help. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. You know, Paul Heyman at one point had been considered to be brought into TNA and had made the comment that it takes time. You know, TNA was such a damaged brand for so many years. The product sucked. And Vince Russo wasn't the only reason that it sucked, but he was certainly a big reason for it. But the product was associated with dog shit for so long that it takes a while to kind of get the stench of dog shit out. It's not something that happens overnight. You know, TNA's been putting on consistently good television shows now for a good month or two at least. It's going to take a lot longer than that, I think, for people to get the message that, hey, this is something worth watching. And it could take 6 months. It could take a year. It could take longer. You know, Ring of Honor puts on a very good product as well, and they're not doing all that well. I mean, there's a lot of concern about the future of Ring of Honor as well because their business is not exactly booming. And how long is Sinclair Broadcasting Group going to support a product that isn't really making all that much money? So there's a lot of concern over that. You can put on a great, you know, in-ring product, but if you don't have stars and if you can't really get a buzz going, then it's really hard to be successful. TNA has the buzz. It's not being reflected necessarily in the ratings. I hope it is long term because it's refreshing to see them finally putting on a product that you can watch and not be pissed off about. And at a time when WWE's product is so goddamn frustrating, because they could have one really good show and have 4 weeks of absolute garbage, which has been happening more often than not of late, it's refreshing to have an alternative to that. And that's what TNA has been. You know, it's been a refreshing alternative to the usual bullshit that we get on Monday nights. Impact Wrestling on Thursday night, another good show. I like the way they started the show, too. It started hot with a match instead of a promo or something like that. And it was Bully Ray in I guess it was a street fight, against Joseph Park Esquire, one of my favorite characters these days in all of wrestling. And they had a short brawl. Crowd was really into it. I still love the way the crowd just follows along with this whole storyline. It's so goddamn obvious where this is going, and the fact that Joe Park and Abyss are one and the same. But the fans, they play along with it. I give the fans in the Impact Zone a lot of credit. I'm not the biggest fan of the Impact Zone. But I think it's really cool the way they're playing along with this whole storyline. And you'll notice that even at the end when he kind of snapped and he gave Bully Ray the black hole slam after losing to him, which of course is Abyss's finishing move, and he kind of sat there with his eyes bugging out of his head, wide open, looking down like he had a momentary lapse. He didn't know what just happened. And I think the fans started chanting, you know, "That was you," or something like that. I love it. I love everything about this story is just great. And, you know, we'll see where they go. I want them to keep dragging it out as much as they possibly can here, because ultimately, if they are going to get rid of this Joe Park character and at some point just go back to Abyss, which I think would be a huge mistake, because I think Abyss has been played out for so long now, and this character at least is intriguing. And I would not be against the fact that if eventually they do the reveal that they have been one and the same, but he kind of keeps like a split personality deal where we can still get Joe Park, I'd be in favor of something like that. They continue the Bound for Glory series, as I mentioned. Samoa Joe lost on this show to Rob Van Dam, who has far fewer points than Joe, so it was fine for him to actually get a win. This was actually a pretty good match, too. Not very long, but this was fine. They had some segments on the show. They continued the Claire Lynch storyline. Chris Daniels, Kazarian came out. They called out Claire, who, by the way, in a pre-taped segment earlier on when they showed her arriving at the building, driving up, they showed her smoking a cigarette, which I thought was kind of interesting given that she's, you know, pregnant and all. It's kind of dumb. So she comes out here, and AJ Styles comes out, and the big reveal is that the baby, according to Claire at least, is in fact AJ Styles. AJ said that was impossible, so I guess we'll find out what that means. But according to Claire, who I still think is going heel at some point, AJ is the father of her baby, her bastard child. So this storyline will continue. We had a promo about Mr. Anderson, his match on the show with Kurt Angle. I made the comment on Twitter. I don't think there's anybody in this company I care less about than Mr. Anderson. His shtick with me, the whole, you know, announcing himself shtick and his over-the-top delivery, it's I'm so beyond bored. He has nothing to offer. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, I don't see the value in this guy. And I hate to say that because I used to be a Ken Kennedy supporter many years ago. I thought this guy had great potential. Obviously, I wasn't the only one. Steve Austin was a big supporter of his back then, too, and I don't know what the fuck happened with this guy, but he doesn't seem to care. His look is boring. His shtick is boring. He's not a very good wrestler. He's just not that good. So I was very happy when Kurt Angle beat him later on in the show. Zema Ion had a match with Dakota Darso, the son of Repo Man, I guess better known as Demolition Smash, one of my favorite tag teams of all time, who should be in the Hall of Fame, by the way. So Zema Ion defended his championship. Austin Aries had his big celebratory promo. People were going nuts for him, which was really cool to see, because if he would have come out there and gotten a lukewarm reaction, I think that would have been a bad sign. But always a good sign when you're a new champion and the person you're going in a new direction with gets that kind of hero's welcome that he got on the show. Bobby Roode came out. I see where people said that Bobby Roode was so great on this show. Bobby Roode got really annoying here. his routine, his shtick, where, you know, he was trying to say something, it was on the tip of his tongue, and he kept screaming, and he couldn't quite spit it out. I know that was the way it was designed, but I think this went on for too long. By the third or fourth time, I was just screaming at the TV, just say whatever the fuck you want to say already, please. This is fucking annoying. But I guess whatever, he played his role. So obviously, he'll get his rematch at some point. Maybe the next pay-per-view, maybe an episode of Impact if they want to try to pop a big rating and do a title change on TV. I don't see Austin Aries holding this championship very long. I hope I'm wrong. I think he deserves the chance to have a somewhat lengthy reign and show maybe he can have some sort of impact, no pun intended, on ratings. I really don't think he will. I mean, he's been all over the TV show for weeks as the X Division champion, and it's not like he's had any sort of impact on ratings then. I don't see why that would change now. So we'll find out when that rematch takes place. Throughout the show, they had Hulk Hogan and Sting backstage teasing that they were going to have a confrontation with this new faction, Aces and Eights, I guess they're called, the hooded faction that had attacked Sting many weeks ago, and they were preparing for battle. And D-Von and Garrett Bischoff offered their hand. They walked into their locker room and said, listen, we want to help you guys. And Hogan basically said, we don't need your help. And this is kind of interesting because if you keep in mind what happened at the end of the show when Hogan got attacked backstage and Aces and Eights attacked Sting out in the arena. And again, nobody came out to help Sting. Yet again, the show goes off the air with Sting getting his ass handed to him. Nobody bothers running out to offer a helping hand, which was completely stupid in my opinion because you had at least D-Von and Garrett Bischoff who at least pretended to give a shit. You would have thought that those two, if nobody else, would have at least run out and they could have gotten their asses kicked as well. But nope. D-Von took Hulk Hogan's words to heart and said, okay, I guess he doesn't want our help, so fuck him. We'll go off and we'll mind our own business. And they were never heard from again. We had Miss Tessmacher beat Gail Kim to retain her Knockouts championship, and she actually used a Randy Savage elbow. And as I mentioned on Twitter, she does the Randy Savage elbow better than CM Punk does. So I don't know what that says about Punk's elbow. Punk, when Punk jumps off the top rope to give his elbow, he gets some height on it, but he just looks like he's completely out of control. You know, he just looks like he's hurling his body in the air. You don't know where he's going to land. I would be terrified to take that elbow from him. And Tessmacher actually had good form. You know, she came off the top, and it was a fine elbow off the top. Punk could take some lessons from her, I think. Kurt Angle beat Mr. Anderson, as I mentioned before, in the Bound for Glory series. And Kurt was bloodied up. His mouth was all bloodied up when the match was over. I guess no big shock considering he was in the ring with Mr. Anderson, who one of the big reasons he was excommunicated from WWE is because so many wrestlers complained about how unsafe it was to work with him. So Kurt Angle was lucky enough to only get away with a bloody mouth when this match was over. And the final part of the show, as I mentioned, was the beatdown. Hulk Hogan never did come out. Sting tried to introduce him. Hulk never showed. They cut backstage. Hulk was, I think, bloodied, laying on the floor. He was telling Brooke Hogan, that is, his daughter, who I'll get to in a second. I forgot to mention her before. Brooke was hunched over her father. She was crying, and Hulk said, you know, my leg, my knee is all messed up. Apparently, this was to give Hulk some time off because he needs another back surgery, which is a shame because I think the last back surgery he had was supposed to be it for him. That was supposed to take care of all of his issues, and if he needs another back surgery, then that's probably not a good sign. And you know, having back problems is no fun. So hopefully, Hulk will get well soon. But his daughter made what I believe was her first live appearance before the live crowd for the first time since her debut. You know, when Dixie Carter first introduced her on that May 31st edition of Impact, it was in the ring in front of the crowd. Since then, she's been in nothing but backstage segments and pre-tapes. So here she was out in front of the live audience, but not in the ring. She joined Mike Tenay and Taz on commentary, and my God, did she suck. I mean, I've been pretty fair to Brooke Hogan. I think she's taken a lot of unfair criticism from people who have made her out to be worse than she actually is. She's bad, no doubt about that, but she hasn't been as bad, I feel, as people have made her out to be. But in this segment, she sucked. She was terrible on commentary. Just absolutely awful. She was lost out there. The announcers were trying to guide her as best they could. She fucking sucked. So if there's one place that she doesn't belong, we know it's at the announce booth, because she was goddamn terrible. And speaking of goddamn terrible, I have all the respect in the world for Mike Tenay, and I probably would take Mike Tenay over Michael Cole, but not by much. Mike Tenay is just not a good play-by-play guy. Maybe once upon a time he was, but he just gets on my nerves now. The way he shouts, and I don't know. I feel like they need a fresh voice in that announce booth. Mike Tenay has been there since the very beginning as the play-by-play guy for TNA, and here's a company that's kind of turning over a new leaf, and a lot of the old faces are not there anymore, and you know, maybe he does other things behind the scenes, and maybe he's part of the creative meetings and stuff, and that's fine, but Mike Tenay is, it struck me on this show, he's just not that good. So I don't know who you go to in his place. You can make an offer for Jim Ross, but he's not going over to TNA, so I'm not really sure who else is out there. They already got rid of Don West, but, you know, Don West had matured into a good color guy. I don't even know that Don West necessarily would be a good play-by-play option. So I don't know who else there is, but Mike Tenay is really not that good. Some other impact notes. I saw the announcement on SE Scoops. It was a news item earlier in the week that Impact was going to 3 hours, and I almost fainted. I was just mortified by this thought. I mean, what is wrong with these companies that they feel they need more television instead of less? But then I read exactly what this extra hour entailed, and I kind of calmed down a little bit here. Whereas Raw going to 3 hours is, you know, meant to be simply an extra hour of the actual live show, the third hour of Impact is not really a third hour of Impact. It's essentially a recap show called Rewind. I did not catch the first edition this week, so I can't comment on it, but apparently the format is such that they show highlights and certain segments from the previous week's Impact an hour before. Now, Impact used to have a show called Reaction, which I thought was really good, and it was one of the few creative ideas that came from the mind of Eric Bischoff back during that period, and didn't do that well, and the show ended after a while. This is essentially a form of that Rewind show, only it airs before Impact instead of afterwards, and it's to get people excited about the latest episode. So I'm fine with that. You know, it's not like the show's going on the air an hour earlier and it's an extra hour of matches and segments and comedy and promos and all that bullshit that we're going to get with Raw. So I'm actually okay with that. The other thing about Impact that's not so good is the DirecTV situation. I'm sure you're all aware of it by now. There is an impasse, I guess you would say, between DirecTV and Viacom. Viacom owns a lot of stations, including Nickelodeon and I think BET and MTV, and of course Spike TV is among them. And I believe it might have been on Thursday that there was a deadline that passed, and so a lot of people were in the dark and were not able to watch the latest episode of Impact on Thursday night. And when TNA, the ratings came in for TNA Impact, it was lower than usual. They got like a 0.85 rating, and I'm sure a lot of that had to do with the DirecTV situation. If DirecTV were making Spike available, I'd have to think that Impact probably would have popped the same rating that they've been doing over the last few weeks, probably in the high 0.9s, maybe around a 1, which again is not outstanding, but is certainly better than a 0.85. It's bad for TNA because the worse these numbers get, and I'd like to think that it wasn't their fault this week, but if these numbers go lower like this, it's not going to help their case. I mean, Impact is only going to be live for another, is it another month or 2? I think it's only another month, month and a half or something like that. They've already got house shows booked on Thursdays after that, so they're going back to a taped format, and I think that really sucks, because if nothing else, going live, if anything, this proves that going live doesn't mean jack shit to the ratings, which I've said for the longest time, but what it has done is it's given the show this unpredictable feel that it didn't have before. When you know that the show is 2 weeks in the can, you know, you don't get as excited for it. And apparently it's helped the morale for some of the guys behind the scenes when you know that you're live on TV. And quite frankly, I think the really boisterous crowds at the Impact Zone are also impacted by going live because they know they're on television. They know that at that very moment they're live on cable television. And it gets you more excited. You know, you want to react more, you want to scream, you want to shout, you want to bring signs, you want to be part of the show. So it'll be interesting when Impact goes back to being taped what kind of difference it makes in the TV show as it is now and how it will be when it's no longer live. Be very interesting to see what happens there. But as far as the DirecTV situation, last I checked, I don't think there's been any resolution to it. There's a big campaign going, a lot of pressure being put on DirecTV, which I think is partly unfair. I think DirecTV is getting a lot of flack for it, but it goes both ways. You know, Viacom wants to charge more money for these channels, and you know, they feel like the ball's in their court here. They have all the power, and they're just going to put all this pressure on DirecTV to kind of cave into their demands and pay the money. That money ultimately gets passed on to the customer who gets fucked over. So it kind of goes both ways. I don't suspect this will go on for that much longer. It's certainly possible that people may miss out on Impact one more week. I don't even know that it'll go that long. And if you do miss Impact again, I would suspect that would be the last time. I just can't see this going on for weeks and weeks. These things usually get resolved pretty quickly, so it may only be a matter of days. They'll perhaps come to some sort of agreement here. But if you are a DirecTV customer, it sucks for you. But look, in today's day and age, it's very easy to watch these things online. I'm sure you could find a streaming site that is streaming Impact. And if nothing else, yes, you won't be able to watch it live, but I guarantee you that within minutes of Impact going off the air, if you go on YouTube, and this goes for any show, by the way, this is Raw as well. It's a little trick here for those of you who can't figure it out on your own. Go on YouTube and type in Impact and then the date. So let's say if it was the July 14th, 2012 edition of Impact. Just type in Impact 7/14/12. Within the hour that the show goes off the air, people will be uploading parts of Impact that you can watch on YouTube very easily, okay? It's not that big of a deal. If you have DirecTV, you can still see Impact. You may just have to wait a couple of hours to see it. It's not the end of the world. And Impact is worth going out of your way to watch. So if you're one of those people, I would suggest that you you get on there and by any means necessary, check out the show because for the most part, it's a very enjoyable pro wrestling show that's a hell of a lot easier to follow than it used to be. Impact used to be a fucking mess. I mean, there were so many goddamn things going on this show at once because that's how Vince Russo would book. He would book to go a million miles an hour, 10 different things going on at once, and nothing would make any fucking sense. You'd have to sit there with a notepad just to take notes. I mean, that's one of the reasons I never used to cover Impact. First of all, Impact used to suck. So, you know, at some point you just throw your hands up in the air and say, I mean, goddamn, at least Raw would have a good show every now and then. But the thing with Impact was it was so difficult to follow. You know, it was almost impossible for me to take notes. And so I just decided it's not worth it. And thankfully that has changed. So check out Impact if you haven't been giving it a chance. Now, actually, let me just say one thing about the Kenny King situation here before I move on. Kenny King, for those of you who are not aware, was a member of the Ring of Honor roster. He was a tag team champion, as a matter of fact, the All Night Express with Rhett Titus. And both sides have their own differing versions of exactly what happened. Kenny King has come out, I think, on his Twitter, and he kind of explained himself and said that he didn't have any sort of written contract with Ring of Honor. And I don't get the impression that he was very impressed by how he was treated by Ring of Honor. There was a shoot interview that him and Rhett Titus did. You could find a trailer for it on YouTube. I think it was only done about like 2 months ago or something. And it's pretty shocking stuff because he's pretty open about not liking certain aspects of Ring of Honor. And you know, when Sinclair bought the company, there was a lot of expectations that, you know, they're a TV company. They know what they're doing. It's going to bring Ring of Honor to new heights. And that's not what happened. And he's cursing in this video. And you know, maybe it was that interview that kind of put him at odds with the company. I don't know, but obviously there was some bad blood simmering there for a while. He showed up at Impact, not this past week, but the week before, showed up on the show. And by the way, I still haven't watched that episode of Impact, the go home show to Destination X. I heard it was a great show. And it's still sitting on my DVR. I just have not had a chance to go back and watch it yet. But apparently that was his first appearance. He appeared as part of the, not the gut check. I guess it was maybe like an X Division match, I guess. And he's looked impressive so far, and he actually got a pretty good reaction from the crowd at the pay-per-view, but no word yet on whether or not he's actually been offered a TNA deal. So just because he jumped from Ring of Honor to TNA does not mean that he's going to actually get a contract with TNA. So Kenny King may be left out in the cold before this is all said and done. So we'll see how that situation develops. In the meantime, Ring of Honor has vacated their tag team belts. They have a tournament that's now ongoing to crown new tag team champions. They're not very happy at all with Kenny King. I saw there was this YouTube promo that the Briscoe brothers shot where they kind of buried Kenny King, and he's kind of persona non grata in Ring of Honor right now. But hey, that's what happens when you jump ship from one company to the other. And, you know, shit happens. Speaking of shit, let's talk about Raw from Monday night. The complete and polar opposite of Impact from this past Thursday night. I sound like a broken record. I can't remember the last time a week has gone by where I have praised Raw and not Impact, or praised both shows. Raw has been shit for the most part for weeks now. And I don't know if it's just that they're in a holding pattern until this Raw 1000 show that they're building everything around on July 23rd, or if they're just creatively bankrupt at this point. Maybe it's been so hot, you know, we've had all these heat waves all over the country this summer. I just came from Vegas. It was 110 degrees every day. And even in New York here, it's been triple digits. Maybe the sun has just fried their brains like eggs. I don't know what to attribute this to, but I missed Raw Monday night. I made sure I DVR'd it. I wasn't home from Vegas yet. I got home late Tuesday night. And based on your tweets, not one person had one good thing to say about Raw from Monday night. And not one person told me, yeah, you know what, you should definitely go back and watch it because it was a good show. I had plenty of people tell me, Salamos, you have to watch Raw because I want to hear you bitch and moan about it on your podcast. That's not exactly what I was hoping to hear. But that was about the only thing that people, the only reason, I should say, that people told me to watch Raw. So, I have to watch Raw. So I went back and I watched the show. And when the show was over, my first impression, in all honesty, was I felt like people might have been a little too hard on the show. I actually didn't think the show was as bad as people made it out to be, but that's just because I may have heard so many awful things about it that it was hard to live up to those expectations. We've seen some pretty fucking terrible Raw shows before. In fact, I think earlier this year, I don't remember which episode it was, but I think I saw one of the worst episodes of Raw in recent memory. So we've seen some pretty god-awful shows, but this was not a good show by any stretch of the imagination. And one funny thing, of course, they were still promoting Charlie Sheen as their social media ambassador on this show for the Raw 1000 episode. And Charlie Sheen, for those of you who are unaware, if you were not one of his 7+ million followers on Twitter, has left the Twitter universe. He is no longer on Twitter. He had a meltdown. I don't know exactly why. Apparently, he just felt that Twitter was not being useful for him. He wasn't really getting much use out of it. I guess maybe his TV show is not doing as well as... I think that really has a lot to do with it. That new anger management TV show of his started out really strong, and from what I understand has kind of tanked in the ratings. And so he just felt that Twitter was of no use to him. He's got 7.5 million people and nobody's watching his shitty TV show. So he left Twitter behind. And the timing is just hilarious, I think. I mean, here's WWE making a deal with Charlie Sheen. Oh my God, this guy has 8 million Twitter followers. He'll tweet about Raw. He'll talk about it. And Charlie Sheen goes, and Charlie Sheen is Charlie Sheen. You know, he's a live wire. You don't know what the guy's going to do. And he, of all things, he leaves Twitter. So that kind of puts WWE in an awkward position now. I would suspect they'll find somebody else who has a lot of Twitter followers. I don't exactly have 7.5 million, but like I said on Facebook, I am available if WWE wants me to tweet about Raw. I tweet about Raw for free every single week. The only thing is, they may not like the tweets that I put on there about Raw, so I could see that potentially being an issue. But just putting it out there, I am available if you want a social media ambassador for your big 1,000th episode. You can reach me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. Probably the quickest way to get a hold of me. I don't suspect I'll be getting an email from anybody there. This show on Monday was just bad. He brought back the anonymous Raw general manager gimmick, one of the worst gimmicks in the history of mankind. A gimmick that they never did pay off, but they certainly led you to believe that John Laurinaitis may have been the driving force behind it. He may have, in fact, been the anonymous Raw GM. They never came directly out and said it. To me, that would have been a far better payoff than what they gave us, which was the big reveal of towards the end of the show. First of all, let me backtrack here. They played this whole thing up for comedy, first and foremost, which is what WWE loves to do with everything. Let's turn it into comedy. Let's make people laugh. But they're not laughing at the comedy. They're laughing at how stupid we are. So they have Santino Marella playing the role of Sherlock Holmes backstage, and he says, oh, I'm going to figure out who the anonymous Raw GM is. And I said on Twitter that when I watched this show, I was drinking. I was going to imbibe on some alcohol during the show. Perhaps it would allow me to tolerate the show better. And by the way, it did, actually, surprisingly enough. There was one segment here where Santino confronted the Great Khali backstage. There was like an iPhone laying there, and I have absolutely no idea what the hell the point of that was. Khali was almost just absolutely indecipherable. I don't know what that was about. But, you know, Santino's going around looking for the Raw GM, and he comes out and he says he's finally figured out who it is, and he goes under the ring, and he gets pulled under the ring, and they pull Santino out, and holding onto Santino's legs is Hornswoggle, who has a little netbook wasn't even a laptop, I don't think. It was a little netbook. And so the big reveal is that it was Hornswoggle, who was the anonymous Raw general manager. Now, I'm too lazy, nor do I care enough to go back and do this. I'm almost positive that in the 2.5 years that we had that stupid bullshit gimmick of the anonymous Raw GM, that somewhere in those 2+ years, there was probably a time that Hornswoggle was in the ring when the anonymous Raw GM chimed in. So that's number one. And I don't even have proof of that. I'm willing to bet that that was the case. So that's inconsistency number one. But then again, everything is inconsistent on this show. I can't get too angry about it. I mean, what is there to get angry about? It was an aborted storyline that they didn't think was important enough to finish off. And again, they brought it back for comedy. They brought it back for laughs. I mean, how angry can I really get at this? The whole storyline was bullshit to begin with. You know, I can rant about the fact that your WrestleMania main event 2 years ago was you know, kind of marred by this stupid gimmick. Actually, WrestleMania 27, the anonymous Raw GM was all over that show. He chimed in at the end of the Jerry Lawler-Michael Cole match to reverse the decision. He chimed in at the end of the John Cena-Miz match and then Rock threw the computer down. I mean, this was a big storyline. And to think that you paid it off with Hornswoggle, to me, what it does is it shows a complete lack of respect for the audience, because you spend so much time getting people to invest in this storyline and to invest in this stupid bullshit, and this is how you pay it off. You know, at least with the McMahon bastard son storyline, I had some sympathy for the company, because the original plan, as I understand it, was for Ken Kennedy to be revealed as McMahon's son, and then I think Kennedy went and got suspended or something happened with him. So Hornswoggle was like a plan B in that case. But in this case, there's absolutely no excuse for it. But to me, it's proof positive that WWE doesn't give a shit. They really don't. They don't care. It's just not important to them. The satisfaction of their audience is not their primary concern. And for any company, a wrestling company or any company, wrestling or not, you know, the satisfaction of your audience, pleasing your audience, giving the people what they want within reason should be your primary objective. And to think that TNA is getting it more right these days than WWE is, it's almost like a real-life bizarro world that we're living in now. But this stupid bullshit angle is a perfect snapshot of WWE these days. And I can't help but just laugh at it. I can't really get too angry. I just kind of shake my head and I laugh, because that's the sad state of affairs that we have in this company right now. The rest of the show was complete shit. Every match on this show felt rushed. You know, in particular, there was a match early on. Well, you had Sheamus beat Jack Swagger in about 30 seconds. He bro-kicked him and pinned him, and then after the match, he bro-kicked him again. I don't know what Jack Swagger did. I don't know whose cornflakes he pissed in, or he must have made a pass at Stephanie McMahon or something. I can't quite figure out the treatment of Jack Swagger. They had a match between Tensai and Dolph Ziggler against Christian and Tyson Kidd. This is you talk about a rushed match. This is about the quickest rush job on a match I've ever seen before. These guys, they didn't even give these guys entrances. The match just started. They were going a million miles an hour. They were trying to get all their spots in. The match literally went about a minute and a half. Why even send these guys out there? What is the fucking point? If you're going to send these guys out there and rush them like they rush these guys, what is the fucking point? The only risk you're running here by doing this is that one of these four guys, all of whom are in your Money in the Bank match, are going to get hurt. Because now they're speed wrestling. So all you're doing is increasing the chances that somebody's going to land wrong, or is going to fall on their shoulder or their neck or something, and somebody's just going to get hurt at a time that they can ill afford to have any more injuries. Why even send these guys out there? Why not just have one of your great WWE's favorite segments? Have like a verbal debate or something in the middle of the ring. God forbid they should let Tensai speak. By the way, Sakamoto is still managing Tensai, for those of you who are keeping score. At least until the next time he beats the shit out of him. So, to me, that tag team match was a great example, a glaring example of a rush job. That match in particular stood out to me. These guys were just, they were huffing it. I mean, they were going a million miles an hour in there. Then, Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler. Now, Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler are not exactly the best of friends on TV, but they've pretty much put their issues behind them, okay? They had their WrestleMania match last year. I think they had more than one match, actually, but whatever the case may be. All of a sudden, Cole and Lawler are at each other's throats again. They got into an argument. I don't even remember what they started arguing about. It was such petty bullshit. And then Cole knocked like a bottle of water or a cup of water onto Lawler or something like that. And instantaneously, the anonymous Raw general manager chimes in with an email. So they don't even pretend that this shit is real. Okay? You know, there's already an email prepared. And they have Michael Cole go up there. And again, how long has it been since we last saw the anonymous Raw GM? You'd think they would work on this. But again, they don't care. Cole is standing up there, and he opens the screen. And there's something written on the screen. But Cole is never actually reading what's on the screen. There's clearly a script or a piece of paper on the keyboard, and he looks down at the paper and reads off the sheet of paper. Why not just hold the fucking script in your hand like Mike Adamly used to do? Why even bother? If you're not going to pretend you're actually reading off the computer screen, it just looks so hokey and so fucking stupid. So fucking stupid. This whole thing was so goddamn contrived. All of a sudden, Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler are worst enemies again. And the last thing what we need on this show is another Michael Cole match, which is what they gave us. Now, it was harmless enough. You know, the King gave him an airplane spin. Nobody cared. He pinned Michael Cole. The anonymous Raw GM reversed it. So, does that mean Hornswoggle is a heel? Was I unaware of this heel turn that Hornswoggle did? Explain that one to me. Why would Hornswoggle, you know, reverse the decision in favor of Michael Cole? Does any of this make sense? Of course not. None of this makes sense. Brodus Clay had a match on this show. He beat Drew McIntyre again. 20 seconds. Who gives a fuck? John Cena and Kane had a tag match against Big Show and Chris Jericho. I will say this. This got pretty good towards the end. And I made the comment on Twitter that, you know, Kane's been in this company now since 1997. That's almost the full 15 years since he made his debut in October of 97. And this guy gets reactions now as strong as ever. I mean, Kane is something else. I mean, he really is. You know, say what you want to about him. I've always been a Kane fan, although the last couple months, you know, I've just... Not that I haven't been a fan, but I just have kind of gotten fatigued of the Kane character. Maybe it's the way he's been booked. That whole bullshit Rise Above Hate storyline with John Cena, the bullshit with Randy Orton, I just couldn't really care. But I still like the Kane character, and I don't know if he's a tweener now. Is he half heel, half babyface? He's getting babyface reactions from some of these crowds. Kane was on his A game in this match. Kane was busting out some moves here. He was really working. He was working his ass off in this match. And this was probably the best match on the entire show, which is not saying much, but still, you know, all four guys worked hard. And the finish of this match came when John Cena was attempting to pin, I forgot who it was, I think he was trying to pin Jericho or something like that, and Big Show reached into the ring, he was not the legal man, and he pulled Cena off of, I guess, Jericho it was. Now, how many times have we seen that in tag team matches in wrestling? Probably thousands of times. For some reason, this annoyed the referee so much, this so offended the referee, that he called for the disqualification. Whatever. I mean, whatever. We know the whole deal on this show about wins and losses and all that. I give TNA a lot of credit. This whole Bound for Glory series, they're actually making matches mean something, which is refreshing for a change. I really think that wrestling fans want to believe that these matches mean something. I really, in my heart of heart, do believe that. If you're not a wrestling fan, if you're a sports entertainment fan, if you're a Fairweather fan, if you're a fan of, you know, Crash TV type bullshit, then yeah, maybe you don't care. But I really, honest to God, believe that people want to believe that these matches mean something, that wins and losses mean something, that, you know, if there was a leaderboard, like they have a leaderboard for the Bound for Glory, if they had like a top 10 power rankings thing, which I've talked about before, the people would follow along. People like that. They like numbers. They like statistics. There's a reason people watch SportsCenter. You know, that's one of the many reasons that they're into sports and that sort of thing. I believe that. Maybe I'm foolish for thinking that, but I really do believe that. And unfortunately, WWE does not. Sin Cara had a match with Heath Slater and beat him. And when the match was over, Bob Backlund came out. He was the legend this week. Former WWF champion Bob Backlund came out. He's, I think, about 63 years old now, they said. And yeah, he looks a little bit older, but for the most part, he looks very much the same, Bob did. For a guy his age, he's in very good shape. Reminded me of when Bob Backlund was in TNA, and I wasn't following TNA so closely at that time, so I kind of regret missing a lot of that. But even when Bob was in TNA, you know, he was very entertaining. And unfortunately, on this show, he really wasn't portraying the crazy Bob, like Mr. Backlund character. But he did put Heath Slater in the Crossface Chicken Wing, which was one of my all-time favorite submission holds, left him laying with the chicken wing. Unfortunately, the people in the crowd either didn't care or didn't know who Bob was, and I don't really blame them for that. But it was kind of sad. My hope is that him participating in Raw in doing the segment this week is maybe something of an indication that there is some sort of open communication between the two sides. And I know Bob was offered at least once before extended the invitation, I should say, to be part of the WWE Hall of Fame and turned it down for whatever reason. I've heard conflicting reasons as to why that is. You know, one story is that he felt he still had another run left in him, which was comical even then. Another story says that the fact that they've inducted people like Pete Rose doesn't sit well with Bob, and he doesn't want to have any part of it. I'm hoping that this means Bob Backlund will be inducted into the Hall of Fame in New York next year. He was a big attraction in the New York area when he was the world champion back in the late 70s, early 80s. You're not going to main event a Hall of Fame with Bob Backlund. They tried for Bruno. They didn't get Bruno. They're going to have to get somebody else. So you're not going to headline with Bob Backlund, but I think he deserves to go in. And New York, if they're going to have the Hall of Fame, let's say at Madison Square Garden, you know, it's the perfect place to induct Bob Backlund. So hopefully this is a sign that might actually happen next year. Main event was a mixed tag match. It was AJ and CM Punk against Daniel Bryan and Eve Torres. And I actually enjoyed the end of this show. The storyline at the beginning was AJ had proposed marriage to CM Punk. And Daniel Bryan came out, didn't like what he was hearing, and he pretended that he had actually woken up that very morning with the expectation of proposing marriage himself to AJ. So this love triangle got more sordid on this show. And so at the end, Punk basically came clean and said that, look, I don't care if this ends up costing me the title, if I piss you off by saying this, but I'm not going to marry you. He said that he at least cares enough about AJ to be honest and truthful with her. And AJ slapped Punk. And the best part about all this, Daniel Bryan is awesome. I've said this before. And I would like to think that most of you by now have come to my way of thinking and knowing that Daniel Bryan is, in fact, quite awesome. And Bryan opens his arms at this point and tells AJ to come home. And this, the way he did this was just hilarious. And AJ kind of makes it seem like she's going to go with Bryan, and she ends up slapping him as well. And then she leaves. I actually enjoyed the end of this show. I don't know. I mean, they are overdoing the AJ thing. She's the best thing in WWE right now. She's the most compelling character, but you can get too much of a good thing. You don't want to have AJ overload. It's like back in the day when Steve Austin was at his peak, okay? There were plenty of Raw shows where Steve Austin would just be all over the show. But a lot of times he wasn't. A lot of times Austin was only in the main event, or he was in the opening segment and the ending segment, and they would keep him out of all the other ones because they didn't want to overexpose Steve Austin. He was their golden goose at the time. And you have to be very careful. You don't want to put him all over the show. Same thing with AJ. I mean, AJ really hasn't showed, you know, that she's going to mean anything for business or anything like that. But she's a compelling character. Yeah, she's a compelling character now. But if she's going to be in six segments on every show, guess what? 3 weeks from now, she's not going to be as compelling. So I think they're really running a risk by overexposing her. But that being said, everyone played their role fine here. I thought AJ was great. I thought Daniel Bryan was great. Punk was Punk. And, and that was Raw. So, again, not the worst Raw I've ever seen by any stretch. I think all those tweets may have softened my stance. Had I gone into the show fresh, I might have been a little more harsh on it. But it was definitely a goddamn terrible show. I just don't know what to make of it. I can't make heads or tails out of why the shows are so bad. I don't know. I'd like to think that maybe it's just they're putting all their effort into that Raw 1000 show, and unfortunately, it's at the expense of all of these shows that come before. If that's what it is, then I guess we're in for another goddamn terrible show this Monday. But again, I don't know if that's what it is. I have no idea. Maybe they are creatively bankrupt. Maybe they're completely out of ideas. Maybe they need somebody to save them. I don't know. But as far as that Raw 1000 show on July 23rd, they're really loading up for it. They announced that The Rock would be appearing on that show. Mick Foley will be there. Bret Hart. Apparently, Steve Blackman will be on the show as well, the Lethal Weapon. Wow, talk about which one of these names doesn't belong. Although I do like Steve Blackman, so he'll be there. Unfortunately, he won't be there with Al Snow, so they can't reprise their fantastic team of head cheese, since Al Snow is with TNA right now. But they're really they're loading up, and I would suspect there'll be some surprises. I don't see how you can do a show like this with all these people and not have Stone Cold Steve Austin on the show. And it's not like there's bad blood between him and the company right now, so I would suspect that either they're going to announce him this Monday on Raw, which wouldn't shock me at all, or they're going to save him as a surprise. We'll find out. I fully expect Steve Austin to be on that show on July 23rd. You cannot have a Raw 1000 celebration and have all these Attitude Era moments each week that you're showcasing and not have Steve Austin as part of that show. He was such a critical part of the success of the show during the show's most successful and exciting era, in my opinion, that you just can't do a show like this without him and have Foley and Triple H and Rock and Brock Lesnar and Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and all these other people. Steve Austin would be a glaring omission if he was not there. So that's the latest on the lineup for Raw 1000. I was wondering if Big Dave might be there, Batista. And I suppose he still could be. There's nothing saying that he can't be. But he did make the announcement this past week that Batista is finally going to be competing in his first MMA fight on my birthday, actually, October 6th, with somebody by the name of Rashid Evans. And I admit, when I first read this, I thought it was Rashad Evans of UFC. So that was kind of a letdown when I found out it wasn't him. So good for Big Dave. You know, he's about 43 years old now. I don't know what he's thinking. But everybody should have a chance to try something in life that they really want to do at least once. If he fights and gets his ass kicked, then he probably won't fight again. And if he fights and doesn't get his ass kicked, you know, even still, I don't really know what sort of, combat career he could possibly have at this stage. He's had a litany of injuries in his career, torn muscles and stuff like that. But if it's something he really wants to do, then good for him. Like I said, everybody should have at least one chance to try something they really want to do. Brock Lesnar tried out for the NFL, didn't work out, but it's one of those things where I guess if you don't try it, you don't want to look back years later on your life and say, "God damn, I wish I had tried that." So he'll be fighting in October. A couple of other notes here. WWE has reportedly signed independent wrestler Pac and Sara Del Rey. Pac is a really exciting wrestler. You could probably find videos of him online. He's been I think he's been wrestling for Dragon Gate, both in Japan and here in the States. There's two different Dragon Gate promotions. And he's kind of on the small side, so it makes me wonder if maybe they're signing him and some of these other guys for that new Cruiserweight show that's been rumored for the new network that may never launch. Sara Del Rey has also been signed, and I was really, really happy to hear about this because you've probably heard me mention her name before as somebody that deserves an opportunity on the big stage, either in TNA or WWE. And of the two, I would have expected TNA to snatch her up. But it was WWE that apparently has signed her. She has a history with some people that are actually in developmental right now. Chris Hero, who is Cassius Ohno, and Antonio Cesaro, the former Claudio Castagnoli, who actually is on TV right now. They were, along with Sara Del Rey, were members of the old Sweet and Sour Incorporated faction of Ring of Honor with the late Larry Sweeney. And I don't know that they would necessarily tie her in with them, but there is a history there if they wanted to go in that direction. Speaking of divas, even though they're bringing in Sara Del Rey, it looks like one of their other divas may be on their way out, Karma. There's been a lot of controversy this week about whether Karma is, in fact, gone from WWE. She was moved to the alumni page on WWE.com, then she was moved back to the active roster section, and then on Friday, which is usually cut day because it's the end of the week and they want to kind of bury the news, Karma was moved back into the alumni section on WWE.com, which I believe she still remains. And she's being very coy on Twitter. It's not like she or anybody else has come directly out and said that she's gone from the company, but it certainly appears that way. And I'm not quite sure why, but I did make the comment about 2 weeks ago or so on the Sound Off that, WWE, here's a company that has no fucking clue what to do with this woman, because if they did, she would have been on TV already. And so this may well be proof positive that they have absolutely no idea what to do with this woman, because, I understand that there's nobody else except maybe Beth Phoenix on the current Divas roster who can reasonably match up with Karma. But so what? So what? You can do other things with her. Put her with somebody. Make her a valet for somebody. She can still wrestle, and she can be paired off with, you know, with some other male wrestler who needs the rub. I don't know. But I'm sure if you would give me 10 minutes to give it some thought, I could have come up with something. But apparently they couldn't. Or maybe it was her decision. You know, maybe this isn't WWE's fault. We don't know the whole story yet. So we'll keep monitoring this and see what happens. But if she is gone, then the last appearance that she will have made on television would have been that cameo earlier this year at the Royal Rumble. And I remember she got a hell of a reaction when she came out. She was over with the fans. And she may have actually eliminated... No, I'm sorry. Dolph Ziggler eliminated her, I think it was. But she gave Dolph Ziggler like a slam, like a double underhook slam or something like that. Pretty impressive stuff. I don't want to see her working with the men like Chyna used to do. I'm not saying that that's what they should do with her, but it looks like that may end up being her last appearance in WWE. And if that's the case, talk about some wasted potential there. Also interesting to note that if Ryback is forced to change his name, you'll know why. There was an item on PW Insider that I noticed yesterday where they said that WWE has been refused registration to trademark the name Ryback. They first got refused back in January because the organization that deals with trademarks and copyrights and stuff like that, for whatever reason, would not allow them to register the name. And WWE had gotten back to them several days ago, giving various reasons why Ryback should be registered, and apparently they were not impressed, the organization, and their decision this time was final. They refused registration for the name because they were not satisfied with WWE's answer. So if Ryback is in fact forced to change his name, you'll know why. So that'll be another interesting situation there to follow. Let's get into a few quick shout-outs and a few quick mailbag questions here. Before that, let me just mention one thing here. In honor of Raw celebrating its 1,000th episode on July 23rd, there will be a special bonus edition of the Solomonster Sounds Off coming up this upcoming week. We'll have a normal show next weekend. That'll be episode 229. But episode 228 is likely going to go up midweek, somewhere in the midweek to late week time frame. So you'll want to watch for it. Subscribe on iTunes now, because that probably will be the quickest way for you to get the show if you're not constantly checking SEScoops.com. But it'll be a special edition of the Sound Off where I chronicle the top 30 moments in the history of Monday Night Raw. My own personal list of the top 30 moments in the history of Monday Night Raw. And notice I said moments, not matches. Moments can mean a lot of different things. It could be a match, it could be part of a match, it could be a promo, it could be a shocking twist as part of an angle or a storyline, it could be a maneuver, it could be anything. And I've spent some time over the last few weeks working on this list and finessing it and fine-tuning it and updating it, and I've finally decided I have settled on a list. It was a hard thing to do. There's been a lot of great moments on the show over the years. A lot of pretty goddamn terrible moments, too, but that would have been a much harder list to to go through with all the goddamn terrible. Just over the last month, I could probably put together a top 50 worst moments in Raw history list. But I figured let's stay positive here and focus on the good. There's been a lot of good stuff on this show over the last 19 years or so, and I've condensed it into a list of the top 30, ranked from number 30 all the way up to the number one moment. So that is going to be part of a special edition of the Sound Off, episode 228, and again that'll be up later on in the week, so you'll want to check that out. That's going to be a 2.5 hour plus show, so it's going to be a big one, but it is a special edition, so you'll want to keep an eye out for that. I just wanted to mention that before we get into the shout-outs here. If you have shout-outs, by the way, email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. I have some people who send in shout-outs on Facebook and Twitter. You need to email me, because that's really the best way that they'll get on the show here. Danish writes in. He just wanted to let everybody know that today, July 15th, is his birthday. He turns 20 years old. He's been a listener to the show since episode 203. Has a quick question here. He says, if Raw keeps putting on shitty shows regularly like they've been doing, and TNA continues putting on good shows like they've been doing, how long do you think it would take TNA to get to WWE's level? He feels that it would take about 5 years at this rate. You know what? There's no way of knowing. I don't think TNA will ever get to WWE's level. And it's not their fault. It's just that WWE has been around far longer than they have. They've got far more revenue streams in place, where even when the product is cold, they can make their money in a lot of other different ways. And wrestling is just not that hot right now. So WWE is feeling the effects of that. TNA is feeling the effects of that. And, you know, whatever momentum and buzz they may have right now, you can tell. I mean, just by looking at the ratings, and it's not having the effect that it should have, even though people are very optimistic about the product right now. But, I mean, they've brought in so many big names. They've brought in Hulk Hogan and Kurt Angle and Sting and, you know, Bischoff and all these different people, and it really just hasn't made a lick of difference. For them to get on WWE's level, the only way that would ever happen is if, I mean, they already have the financial backing, I guess, but if somebody came in with, you know, unlimited millions of dollars, and somebody with good connections can get them a better TV slot on a higher-rated cable network or a broadcast network or something like that, that's about the only way that TNA would have a snowball's chance in hell of getting to WWE's level. And I don't see that happening. So what TNA should focus on is just being the best that TNA can be and continuing to put on the best product possible, because I really feel like Paul Heyman felt that it's going to take a while. But at some point, you're going to reach a point where people are going to look at the product and go, you know what, maybe I ought to give TNA a second chance, because they were so bad for so long. But now they've been good for a year. They've been good for a year and a half, whatever it may be. I would like to think that at some point, people will give them that second chance and they'll kind of turn the corner. But it's going to take time. But if they aspire to be on WWE's level, then they're going to fail, because that's just not a realistic expectation. So you say 5 years. I say if there's even a chance of it happening, it's going to take a lot longer than 5 years. WWE has just been around for far too long. They've planted their flags in so many different places. It's a marathon, not a sprint. It really is. It's just not something I think that's a realistic goal at this point for TNA to have. James Alexander writes in. He's a friend of the show. He is cashing in his shout-out for the iTunes review that he left earlier in the week. I want to thank him for that. By the way, you can leave reviews for the show in iTunes. It's very easy, and if you do, you get an automatic shout-out if you let me know about it. He also wanted to ask if I can give a quick plug to the World of Unpredictable Wrestling. That's the Johnny Rods promotion in Brooklyn, New York. They have their next show coming up next weekend, in fact, on Saturday, July 21st at 8 p.m. It'll be airing for free on GoFightLive.tv. So for those of you who have never checked out a WUW show before, as I have done, I've actually checked out several shows live. It's always fun, as independent wrestling tends to be. You can check it out on GFL.tv, or you can go, I believe it's taking place at Gleason's Gym in Brooklyn, New York. That's next Saturday, the 21st. I will not be there. As there is a TNA baseball show coming back to Brooklyn, I'll be at that show, so I'm very much looking forward to that. The Icon Sting will be making a rare appearance in Brooklyn, New York, which I'm very much looking forward to, and I'll have a full report on that on the next Sound Off 229 next weekend. I actually have a few other quick birthday shout-outs here that I almost neglected. This one comes from Prince. He's celebrating a birthday on the 13th of July. It was a few days ago. Wanted to know if you can get a shout-out. Also, wanted to let you know that I have been listening to you since my second year in the Navy, so I'm guessing around 2008. You have helped me so much with my time in the Navy and my time being deployed there in Bahrain, knowing that I get to listen to your opinions. Can I also get a shout-out from my friend Richard? He listens to you as much as I do, so absolutely. Glad to hear that Prince and Richard are big fans of the show. I very much appreciate that. And I had another one here. Let me just check. I know another one of our listeners here, Alejandro, I believe it was. Yes, it is. Alejandro celebrating a birthday also on July 13th. He turned 43 and also was hoping for a shout-out for his brother Juan Carlos, who introduced him to SE Scoops and to the Sound Off. And Juan turns 42 on July 17th. So happy birthday to the two brothers there. I very much appreciate your support. And let's take a few questions here before we head off for this weekend here on this Money in the Bank Sunday. Daryl from Windsor, Ontario, Canada writes in, do you believe that it would be smart by WWE to book shows, if the arenas are available, of course, in the New York, Chicago, or anywhere in Canadian areas when they are on the road to WrestleMania. I believe that it would be better if they did, because 9 times out of 10, you know that it's going to be a hot crowd, and usually when the crowd's hot, the promo work and the in-ring action seem a bit better than normal. What are your thoughts? I think WWE would be much better putting on a good product and not worrying about going to a, quote, hot city. Because if the product is shit, I will tell you right now, as a New Yorker, and I can't speak for the people of Chicago, although Chicago typically does turn out some of the best crowds, although I've never been to Chicago before, but the fans in New York and probably Chicago and those places that you mentioned, if the show is shit, they're going to let you know about it. Okay, you can't just expect to go into cities like that and put on an average show or a shitty show and everyone's going to just cheer their heads off. I mean, they're the same people that will sit there and chant boring or will, you know, hold up signs that say, who booked this shit, you know, and deservedly so. I think they're much better off just putting on an interesting product. And, you know, the road to WrestleMania, usually they're on their A game. I wish they could be on their A game all year long and not just 2 or 3 months out of the year late winter, early spring, but unfortunately that's usually how it works. I would just much rather prefer they put on a compelling, interesting product with good matches and interesting characters. And, you know, you can be in Lexington, Kentucky, Phoenix, Arizona, you can be somewhere in Oregon or anywhere else. You know, you'll always have your shitty crowds, but if you put on a good product, I think people will react to it. For, you know, Raw this past week, for example, off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly where Raw was, but that was a pretty hot crowd, and I felt bad for them because the crowd deserved so much more than what they got. Actually, it might have been Denver, now that I think about it. Maybe they were in the site of the Denver debacle from many years ago, but those fans deserved a hell of a lot better than that shit show they were treated to on Monday night. You know, but that wasn't by any means a major city like a New York or an L.A. or a Chicago, but they were hot, so, you know, it doesn't really matter. I would just much rather they put on a good product and not worry so much about what city they're in. Eddie from Ireland writes in. He's 16 years old. He's been listening to The Sound Off since about episode 100. And he says, it's funny you mentioned on the other week on The Sound Off how people would always see the show on SE Scoops and never listen to it until a certain headline caught their eye, because that's exactly what I did, and I have not missed an episode since. I recently YouTubed Up and Coming Wrestlers, since the new NXT show inspired me to do so, and I came across Dean Ambrose. His insane promos and the way he works in the ring instantly reminded me of the Joker from The Dark Knight. Ambrose stood out miles ahead of everybody else. I was wondering if there's been any more news on when he'll be debuting on TV. I just pray they let him keep the crazy gimmick he's got now, because it will certainly make him big because of its originality in my eyes. He said last year when Punk visited FCW that if he ever went to Raw, Punk would be the first person he would go after. And I think that they can incorporate Ambrose with AJ, as both gimmicks are similar, resulting in a feud with CM Punk. That's actually a great idea. And I mentioned that idea a few weeks ago about the possibility of pairing a debuting Ambrose off with AJ as kind of the payoff to the storyline, where she basically says, you know, F you to both Punk and Bryan, and ends up aligning with Ambrose, who, you know, was a bit cuckoo in the head, I think, if you have seen any of his work with this gimmick. And I would not be opposed to pairing off Ambrose with Punk, except that what you're doing in that case is you're not really giving him the best chance to succeed, I don't think. Because if you take this new guy and you immediately put him in a feud with the world champion, you know, unless Punk loses the title at Money in the Bank, you know, you're setting him up to fail, because unless the angle is like a lighting the ratings world on fire and everyone's genuinely excited and it's really moving business in some way, he'll be the one to get the blame for it if it fails. It's not going to be Punk. And by no means is it going to be the people behind the scenes who are going to point fingers at each other. It's going to be Dean Ambrose. And I would like to see him get the best chance to succeed. Now, you can pair him off with AJ, but I don't know about taking a new guy and putting him immediately into a main event feud. I think he's ready for it. I would love to see Punk and Ambrose. And I remember watching that match that Punk had with Ambrose. Punk, on his day off last year, went to an FCW show and worked a match with Dean Ambrose that was fucking awesome. And he wouldn't have done that if he didn't think highly of Ambrose. A lot of people do. So I'm sure Punk would love to work with him, and I'm not saying I would hate it if they put the two of them together. My concern would be that, again, if it doesn't succeed, or they don't give it a chance to succeed, he'll get the blame for it. And as we've seen with people, whether it's Jack Swagger or any other number of guys who were given the ball and then had the ball yanked away from them, It's sometimes very hard to recover from that. So that would be my only concern here. But your idea is a great one. I actually like that idea a lot. Akash from Long Island, New York writes in, says, recently in a mailbag question on the main page, someone asked, what match would you show to an alien that had never seen a pro wrestling match before? Your answer was Dude Love vs. Stone Cold from Over the Edge in 98, and I could not agree more. My question this time is similar. I would like to know if you had to pick one WrestleMania that displays every aspect of pro wrestling, including drama, technical wrestling, showmanship, athleticism, and great theatrics all in one, which WrestleMania would it be and why? If you're talking about WrestleMania shows, WrestleMania 17 is probably, in my opinion, still the best WrestleMania of all time. You had some great matches on that show. You had great drama with the Vince Shane brawl and Linda rising from her chair from her, you know, her drugged up state, and that's still one of the biggest reactions and pops from a crowd I've ever seen before, when Linda rose out of her chair and kicked Vince in the balls. The drama in the main event with Austin and The Rock, great wrestling with Kurt Angle and Benoit, and even Undertaker and Triple H had a great match. TLC 2 is still my favorite of the four TLC tag matches that we had. So in terms of WrestleMania shows, X7 to me still stands head and shoulders above the rest. If you're talking about WrestleMania matches, it's hard to argue against Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker from WrestleMania 25. It was a great match. There was some great wrestling involved, great drama. I think the drama might be lost if you're not familiar with Michaels and Undertaker and their signature maneuvers, which played a lot into the near falls and everything. So if for some reason I wasn't going to pick that match, then Bret Hart and Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13 would be an obvious choice. I mean, if you want to talk about drama and wrestling and athleticism and showmanship, you can't go wrong picking that match. So I would be fine with either one of those. Grant writes in, this was another birthday shout-out I neglected to mention before. He's from Kansas City, was wondering if he can get a birthday shout-out. His big day was on July 9th. He's been a listener since episode 110. Anything for a long-time listener. So, happy birthday, Grant. Hope you had a good day. Shane from Fort Lauderdale, Florida writes in, my question is that if you were in charge in WWE, would you allow Zack Ryder to present his internet championship as a competitive belt for people to win in WWE? It could be a mid-card or a superstars belt that, if used correctly, could highlight the mid-carders and get them over. Technically, you don't need to be on the, quote, internet to win it, but I think the championship could show WWE's interaction with the internet. It would be like the European Championship. You don't have to be European to win it. Just like the U.S. title, I guess, right? You don't have to be from the U.S. to win it either, as our current United States champion is actually from Italy, if the storyline is to be believed, so which I think is bullshit, by the way. No, I think we don't need more titles. As fun as it would be, for example, to once again have the hardcore title back with the 24/7 rule and all that, and I'm all for having fun, the last thing we need is more championships. Although I will say, and this is kind of sad actually, Zack Ryder's internet championship is one of the best looking titles in the entire company, with the exception maybe of the World Heavyweight title and the Intercontinental title, which I'm a big fan of. It's certainly better than that atrocity that CM Punk carries around. And by the way, we're probably only about a week away from a new WWE Championship belt. Haven't forgotten about that. I would expect that they would unveil that new title that we saw pictures of several weeks ago on the Raw 1000 show. I have not heard anything about that, but I would say that's a pretty good time to present the new championship if you were going to actually have one. And CM Punk himself has said that there is a new title, so this coming Monday on Raw may be the last time for the spinner belt that doesn't spin. So if you are a fan of that belt, enjoy it while it lasts, because I'm holding out hope that we will have a new title, and I will not regret wishing for a new title. I could see the new title being unveiled, and I don't know how it could be worse than the current one. You know, the current one, at least it doesn't spin, and it's not, I've seen worse, but to me, it's not becoming of what a WWE Championship belt should look like. So I am very much looking forward to seeing what this new title looks like, and I would expect that July 23rd, we're going to see the new belt. But Zack Ryder's belt looks great. I don't need to see more championships defended in WWE. I just think it waters them down. You don't need more titles. You don't. That's the last thing you need. So we're going to wrap up the mailbag. If you have questions, shout-outs, all that stuff, again, email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. You can follow me, please, on Twitter, @solemonster, and friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/thesolemonster. I'm sure we'll have a very lively discussion ongoing tomorrow night during Monday Night Raw, and probably even tonight during the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Don't forget that tomorrow night, Monday, July 16th, 1 hour before the final two-hour edition of Raw, beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern, on SEScoops.com, we will be bringing back SE Scoops Live with yours truly and Noah Mark. We'll be talking about the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. We'll be talking about Raw, maybe some TNA too. And we'll be taking some live calls from you guys. So keep it locked in on Twitter, Facebook, and SE Scoops for the phone number and all the latest and greatest information on that. Hopefully you can join us and be part of that show. And again, keep an eye out for a special edition of the Sound Off, what will be episode 228, coming up sometime before next weekend, probably midweek or later in the week. I will have it up. It is a special 2.5 hour edition of the Sound Off, chronicling the top 30 moments in the history of Monday Night Raw, from number 30 ranked all the way up to number 1. Not an easy thing to put a list like that together. A lot of good moments had to be neglected, but I tried to get a good mix on there. And again, it's a subjective thing. Everybody will have their own personal opinions on what should and should not be on there, but I don't care. It's my list. I think it's the best list, and I'll let you be the judge. So keep an eye out for that. That special edition of the show should be up a little bit later on in the week. Now would be a good time, by the way, to subscribe in iTunes as well. I can't make any guarantees that there won't be issues with Podbean. That's kind of out of my hands. But if there aren't, everything hopefully will be working fine. Subscribe in iTunes. It is free. And whenever a new show goes up, whatever day of the week it may be, you will be the first to know about it because it will be automatically downloaded for you. So just type in the name of the show, Solemonster Sounds Off. It should come right up. Subscribe, and you should be all set. So that takes care of episode 227. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to the show. We are back this week after being off last weekend. And tonight is Money in the Bank, so if you are tuning into the pay-per-view, enjoy it. Let me know what you think. And until next time, be well, stay safe, and keep it locked in right here. All good stuff this week coming up on SEScoops.com, so you won't want to miss any of it. Until next time, be well, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.